While I am certainly happy to finally have been proven right after so many years in regard to the misdeeds of the High Overseer, the truth is I'm regretful I was not able to act sooner. It's possible I could have prevented all this from happening. Perhaps, though, that is just wishful thinking. What matters is what happens now. I need to do everything I can to help those people on their mission. It won't be easy. It might not even be truly possible to do anything at all. But if Ituriel still stands, then there is always hope. The libraries of Candlekeep will hopefully give them at least some information. Not to mention my friend. Well, she wishes to aid them as well. I need to trust that her instincts are correct on this. After all, I don't believe anyone will know Zariel better than her. In the meantime, I have my own work to attend to. I must write to all the great cities about the truth of what has happened. If Ituriel cannot be saved, well, there are many things that will need to happen to help keep peace in the region and protect its people. It will not be easy. I shall simply have to hope that this little party can bring back Ituriel somehow. Otherwise, I feel there is simply no longer any time to send anyone else. They truly are Ituriel's only hope. This is Red Moon Roleplaying. A few hours pass as all of you are welcome to stay in this arcane study and partake of the books and the knowledge on the walls that you find quite quickly give you much information on the realms of the infernal, devils, arcane powers. Of course, you only have a few hours and there are many books, so everyone will have to roll an investigation check.
18.
And 8. I don't read too good.
Royce, it's less that you don't read well, but more that you just find one book and you're just like, wait, planar travel, 9 hells, okay, Avernus is the first one. Apparently it's all very orderly. Interesting. Larissa and Lofar, you find a lot more information, a lot of it general, but each of you can ask something specific and I will answer best I can. Lofar, what specific thing do you gain in these few hours?
Then I wish to know as much as I can about the Blood War.
The Blood War, the eternal war between devils and demons, waged, they say, since the very dawn of existence. Why is this war waged? Well, because devils and demons are polar opposites in ideology. Devils believe in order, law, tyranny, ruling in absolute power, and having everything have its place in this infernal hierarchy. Demons care about none of that. All demons care about is destruction, death, chaos and carnage. Demons wish to unmake everything. The only rulers of demons are the demons who are so proficient at destruction they become so powerful that they can order the other demons around. But any of these demons could be destroyed by another demon and the eternal cycle would continue. The infernal, the devils on the other hand, this is not the way at all. There is promotion, there is hierarchy, there is treachery and deceit and power plays, of course, but it all has to be under the guise of cunning plays, and none is better than, of course, Asmodeus, ruler of all devils. There are none greater than him, and it seems there never will be, and all devil kind fall beneath his sway and his rule of the realms of Beator. The Blood War is fought constantly along the River Styx. This is because the River Styx runs through all infernal and demonic realms. The souls of the dead run through it, and it is in Beator they are collected. But it does go to the Abyss as well. The Abyss not being a place where a soul goes, but being just a pure maelstrom of evil, dark, chaotic energy. The issue, of course, as the book tells you, is that the Blood War is taxing on Devilkind. For when the demons invade hell, devils die. And devils who die in hell die forever. While demons are merely sent back to the abyss. This is why demons do not often fight in the abyss, for the rules will apply to them there as well. So the devils always apparently require manpower, always the drive for more souls, and that suits devils just fine, for they love nothing more than the souls of corrupted mortals, tempted for the souls of mortals as well as currency among their kind and symbols of power are also how devils are made. Every devil, beyond perhaps maybe Asmodeus himself, was once a soul.
And that is what I read and what I learn. And I feel like I know a little bit more about the conflict that is going on there and the differences between devils and demons and what they fear. And perhaps who can be bargained with. That perhaps devils can be used in some way during this journey we will be on. But one must be very careful.
Oh, they certainly can. Meanwhile, Larissa, what specific thing do you wish to know about?
Larissa wants to go through and look for a book that was probably written by somebody a very long time ago about a visit to Avernus, if there is one. She wants to find out what this city, this layer of hell, is like in terms of to mortal travellers. Are there, you know, what are the dangers outside of getting caught up into a contract? Things that you should know before going there. The kind of thing that you'd look up if you were going to like a foreign country, but like, you know, what things do you do? What things do you not do? What are the comments from this person about what it's actually like to traverse through this place?
It takes a while to find, but with your role, you do find a very rare copy of Mordenkainen's Theories of the Plains. Mordenkainen being a very famous archmage wizard, said to have come from another plane himself entirely to the one you are on, and to have travelled across the whole multiverse and interacted with many, a devil, an angel, and all the things in between. In his footnotes, he quotes that Avernus was once said to be a paradise. Strange, I know. How could hell have paradise? But the idea of the first layer of hell in Asmodeus' grand scheme was to be the icing on the cake, the temptation, a place to go where everything you wanted would be given for the low, low cost of your soul. However, being the first layer and the closest to all the other planes of existence meant that in the Blood War, it was the first battleground. And it has never stopped being the first battleground. For time immemorial, the beautiful cities, the gardens, all the wonders of this Avernus have been ground to dust and grime and grit. Avernus is a war zone, a constant layer of conflict and misery. The skies, hellish, the landscape broken, torn and twisted, filled with ruins and countless battles that have been held upon it. It is the first layer of hell, the first layer where devils can freely interact with any. You know that devils in the material plane need to be summoned, and most of them are summoned into service. They don't stay for long. They die, they go back. And most lesser devils cannot do more than that. But in hell itself, even lesser devils can make deals. Even lesser devils have the chance of promotion. Promotion which is so important to the devil. They literally change form, grow in power. Archdevils are the highest promoted devils there are. The rulers of hell, only answering to Asmodeus himself. Avernus is a war zone, and one must be prepared that there will be little to forage. There will be few, if any, places of safety. There are no true cities, there are no true areas in Avernus. It is an infinite stretch, stretching across the rest of the layers of hell. Not a very pleasant place. And he advises, not one to be visited for long, but necessary, for if you wish to access any other layer of hell, you must always go through Avernus.
Larissa kind of notes all of this down in her mind and tries to cement this idea and reminding herself that she's not safe there. I guess there's a bit of her that hopes that perhaps she might be a little bit more safe than some people because of her heritage, but she has to remind herself not to let that overtake her. Because I think to some degree she's a little bit scared of that infernal heritage. She knows how people react to her up here, and, you know, what in some cities it's better than others, but she is frowned upon because of how she looks. And she's already been told once by the Duke that she was blessed. And it could be very easy for her to fall into the thought that somehow that protects her, that her heritage protects her. She begins to wonder if perhaps it will draw more attention to Lothar and Royce because of her heritage, because she's covered in infernal tattoos that she doesn't entirely understand. And the fear of somebody down there trying to use that heritage against her as well.
It's a possibility you can't shake. Although, you take heart in knowing that as a tiefling, you are only touched by the infernal. You are not, as some people would say, half-devil. That is a different creature entirely.
She begins to wonder, though, whether or not the fact that she, you know, her family lineage has been touched by a devil makes it better or worse.
And you discuss these things as you read over the books. Silvara emerges. Right. The ritual will soon be ready. Before we begin, though, I'd like you to meet your guide. You'll need a guide, after all, someone who has been to hell before. I was a little hesitant to use her, but she really wants to help. Lulu, in you come. Behind Silvara comes a very strange creature indeed. It looks like a small little elephant. Elephant itself being quite an exotic creature that you may have only seen in books or heard of in places like Chult. It is very small, though, and yellow, and it has two little wings that it sort of flies in on. It comes in and does a little twirl in the air. Hello, everyone. My name is Lulu. I'm going to help you.
Well, we need all the help that we can get.
I don't mean to be rude, but... Sorry, what are you?
Don't worry, you can't be rude to me. I am an elephant. Hegel from Mount Celestia.
Mount Celestia, like angels and celestial beings, Mount Angel.
The creature smiles and gives a little friendly laugh, but it's not a laugh of mocking. It's just that laugh, something you feel like a child would laugh at a silly comment you make, generally enjoying your presence. Yes, that's right.
You're a celestial.
Yes.
Nice to... Royce kind of bows his head. Nice to meet you, Lulu. I'm Royce.
Your name is Royce, is it? She flies over to your face and sort of just starts flying about you quite excited. Oh, it's a pleasure to meet you, Royce. I feel we will be best friends.
Sure, I hope so.
Now, if you're wondering, Silvara has explained everything to me. She is a very good friend of mine as well. I know it might seem strange, but... I've been to hell. I know the ways you could possibly get back if it's really hard for us to get back. And I really want to come and help you because I know Zariel. And if you're going down there and she's involved and you're helping people, well, maybe we can find Zariel and then we could help her too.
So you, as in you actually know Zariel?
Yes, in a way, kind of. She then looks a little sad, and Silvara comes forward and says, unfortunately, Lulu has a little bit of a memory problem. I found her many years ago in the Fields of the Dead, near one of the portals there that can, if opened correctly, lead to hell. Very difficult, and also, for our situation, weeks of travel away. Not good. She didn't really remember who she was, but I've been doing my best to help her in these years, and she's starting to remember a little, but it's been difficult. I was hesitant for sending her with you, but it might actually help, believe it or not. And the little Oliphant goes, yes, I think it will.
Killing Fields or Death Fields or the same fields that the Hellriders went through 50 years ago with Zariel, the last Celestial we know to be in those fields.
Yes, Royce, that is correct. It's a treacherous place these days. Unlawful hill land, lots of bandits, nothing grows there.
Lulu, are you not going to be like a shining beacon down there? And I don't mean in the sense of hope and light and love. I mean in the sense of you're a Celestial, and I'm pretty sure that you're gonna ring some alarm bells for some devils.
No, not really. Actually, they thought me insignificant and foolish. I think there was a lot of running and a lot of being hurt. But I made it out before. And I can help you. I think I'll remember places.
I'm sorry. You're just quite small and a little bit adorable. You can fight too, though, right?
She kind of winces a little and goes, well, I don't really like fighting. And I can't really remember some of the things I could do. But you'll protect me.
Yes, we will.
It's kind of hard not to. You're quite... Larissa's a little bit taken aback. She quite likes cute-looking animals. And this is just... She's like, this is adorable, but this thing is... It's so small, and how can it... She's concerned.
As you're thinking this, Lulu comes towards you and begins to fly around your head, much like she was doing Royce. Don't worry, I know you'll do your best. Besides, I think... I'm pretty sure if I get badly hurt anyway, I just come back. I only really die in Celestia.
No, well, that's reassuring. Maybe let's not try and test that theory.
Oh, I'm very happy not to test that theory.
Maybe you'll remember how to do some of the stuff you could do.
That's what I'm hoping. And to be honest, as I've explained to Silvara, I really want to come. If you were going to see Zariel, then we might be able to save her.
Yes, I think that may be one of the few ways to actually save everyone, right? Is if we could somehow save her. She's an angel. You don't stop being an angel deep inside, right? I mean, there's still something there to save.
Lulu comes to you, Lothar, and again, an excitement flies around you. Yes, exactly. You're totally right, Lothar. We're going to be really good friends as well. I like you.
And I nod and I smile. I think so, Lulu. It's very nice to meet you.
Although she does then wince a little and say, the shield's not so bad, but he doesn't seem very nice. Or she, or it. Maybe I'll leave him alone.
Best to stay away.
But all three of you, and you too, Rhea, I think we'll be good friends. Silvara comes forward and goes, to be honest, friends, there is a more practical reason to Lulu joining you as well. Despite everything, Lulu is a creature of the Celestial. There is an element to her that will be useful to you. Hell can be trying. The greatest wizards, the greatest beings travel there only when they have to. It will try to bring you down. It will try to corrupt you. It will try to take your soul in any way it can. Subtly. It's not like you're going to be immediately accosted. But it will be trickier than that. And then sometimes, don't forget, there will be demons there as well, and they will simply just try and eat you.
Well, if I had to pick a side, it sounds like I would rather have a verbal sparring match with a demon, or with a devil, than a demon.
Very well, are you prepared?
As prepared as we ever will be.
Rhea comes forward, smiles at this creature, and says, yes, we are ready.
Let's make away then.
And so Vara begins to lead you away. Fisk, by the way, giving a final parting nod, saying, well, it was a pleasure working with all of you. Good luck. I'm afraid I have other places to be. But I do truly wish you success in your journey.
Same to you, Fisk.
Thank you for all your help, Fisk.
On the contrary, I don't know if I could have done it without yours.
Look after yourself. Maybe stay out of Baldur's Gate for a while.
Maybe I will, but don't worry, Larissa. I always do. And he smiles and rubs that forked beard he had. And you see him not anymore as you descend down into the bowels of Candlekeep, passing by many doors and going through many catacombs. You come to a chamber, quite small really. In the middle of it is a circle, and the circle is flanked by various pylons with strange crystals atop them. Silvara moves forward and fetches from her pouch a strange-looking fork. At least that's what you think it is. It looks like a fork, but it's bent in a weird way. Anyone familiar with the art of plane shifting?
Can't say I am, no.
Don't worry. Plane shifting is considered one of the highest arts archmages can perform. It's not everyone who can just decide to go for a cup of tea in limbo. But this tuning fork is tuned to Avernus. It is part of the magic. I'm sorry I cannot come with you. To be honest, in case you fail, I need to begin sending missives to Waterdeep, to Neverwinter, to all cities that can hear. I'm sure I don't need to tell you that even if Aturiel is not coming back, something needs to be done. The land that is left, the refugees, there are many people in this world who will try and use this for their own ends. Are you ready? Step into the circle, and I shall send you to Aturiel.
I strap on the shield, and I touch my hammer at my side. I unclasp it, and I hold it in my hand, and I look to my companions, and I begin walking in.
Larissa will go and shake Silvara's hand and just give her a nod and then turn, kind of patting Royce on the shoulder and joining Lothar on the circle.
As you shake the hand, she just in parting says, "Be careful, Larissa. Our kind especially. There are different dangers in Avernus compared to some others. I'm sure you understand what I mean."
Yes, I do. Thank you.
And Royce.
As Larissa walks past me and pats me on the shoulder, and to look to Lulu and kind of tap my shoulder to... You said she's about, what, a foot high? Like, she's not big, Lulu, by the sounds of it, is it?
No, she's quite small. About the size of a 4-year-old. So it's not that she's tiny, tiny, but she's small.
Okay, well then she won't need to sit on my shoulder because she's flying around. So I'm going to just look to Lulu, follow Larissa in, and just kind of nod to Silvara and say, maybe pray for us with a wink.
I shall pray to the gods of magic as best I can. Are you ready?
Send us before we change our minds.
And Rhea gets herself ready, gets her sword sort of like... May Helm and Torm protect us. And Lulu seems quite happy and excited, but a little, you know, sits down in the middle of the circle. Silvara begins to enchant the circle. Flames of radiant energy begin to surround you. You feel a strange tremor sensation. Remember, Lulu may be your chance to get back, but otherwise you will be on your own down there. Find out what happened to Aturiel. Find whatever help you can. Whatever help you can. And I wish you luck. And Lothar, at the back of your mind, you hear that voice saying, "Yes, any help we can, Lothar. No time for those qualms of yours. You want to save your city, you're going to need to do whatever it takes. You understand?"
"I understand what you mean."
And... the shimmering intensifies and you all feel a strange vertigo sensation. The world tilts upward and then to the left slightly. And then you are no longer in Candlekeep. You are met with an immense pressure. You feel all of you as if you've been punched in the gut. This causes you to stagger a little. You are hot, intensely hot. And yet not quite hot enough. It's almost that heat you feel on a really hot summer's day. You're not in a furnace, but it's deeply uncomfortable. The air is tight, and full of brimstone, sulfur, something burning. You open your eyes and you are surrounded by a building or several buildings, you think, but there is rubble, there is chaos, there is noise, so much noise, screaming, growls, laughter, banging, a crackling of some kind. You stumble a little as you feel the ground ever so slightly shake beneath your feet for a few seconds, and then, most of all, you look up and see before you, in the sky, in front of a red void of nothingness, a giant hole. Is it a hole? No. It's a circle, or a orb, or something circular, almost covering all view, and from it, radiating electricity, blue, green, sort of crackling from it, and as you are marvelling at this horrific sight, a lightning bolt comes close by, and you see a tower kind of fall and collapse, and then there is a rush of dirt and air, and it seems you're on a street on fire, surrounded by flaming buildings, and in a place of true madness. How are you feeling, everyone?
I swallow hard, and I immediately begin doubting the decision that I have made. I felt so sure, but I wasn't prepared for this. But I hold the shield up, and this is the right way to go, right? You're sure of that?
The shield does not respond. Larissa, how are you feeling?
Larissa feels a little bit nauseous from the planular travel. It's not a thing she's ever done before, and disorientated in the arrival. And she's just looking around her at this quite literal hellscape. And it's like she can't believe her eyes, she can't take it all in this moment. It's just that, the shock of, it's suddenly real. We're here. We were just talking about it before. It was just the thought of being there, but now she is standing here in the place that she had figured she would never come and had hoped, even as a child, she would never go. But here she is.
Royce, how are you feeling?
So Royce, briefly taken aback by the whole scene and the kind of intense nature of it, but I take a couple of steps forward, as if to move on, just determined to Tobin is the only thing on his mind, trying to find Tobin, thinking he has a time pressure, there's a ticking clock in terms of his soul being put in this furnace and forged. So as I step a couple of feet forward, I turn and say, come on, we can't all sit around here waiting to be eaten or God knows what.
Lofa, you stand there, your question unanswered, and as you come to your senses and you hear Royce speaking, you look around. What do you do, Lofa?
Why aren't you answering me? Speak! You told me this is where we were going. Don't be quiet on me now.
Quiet? Why would I know where we're going now? I know hell, not your city of Aturiel. I haven't been there.
Well, it's good to know that you're still there. I thought for sure you'd abandon me.
Silence! I need to think! And the voice sort of snaps at you and is gone.
Yes, I looked at Royce. Alright, here we are.
Right. So, what's our plan of attack here?
All three of you take in that you are in a city. You must be. You look down and there are paving stones you're standing on. The rubble is masonry from buildings. The tower just came down was a building. But everything is on fire. And again, you can hear screams and the clashing of metal. Rhea stumbles forth a little and starts to swear. She stumbles forwards a little and grabs her sword. She uses it to pull herself up. Oh, gods. It's Uturiel. The streets... This is Uturiel. The streets are on fire. I didn't even imagine. Oh, God. We need to find... I don't know. We need to find anyone. If there's anyone to save.
Yes. Yes, we can still save this place. We just need to act together. What is the most important place in Eturiel? Would it be, I don't know, where the High Overseer was? Do you have a castle or a main keep in here? Something that would be of extra importance?
Rhea takes a moment to collect herself. She sort of thumps her chest a few times, and then the moment is gone and she seems more certain, more sure. The High Hall. The High Hall is where the Overseer and all the nobles and the commanders of Turia would be. If in a situation like this, that is where they would be. I know the way. I just need to work out where we are right now. She starts moving towards what looks like a street, but again, it's so hard to tell in all this rubble and smoke. Maybe this way. Come, we make for the High Hall.
Yes, let's.
I think we should be careful going through here. We don't know what's in these streets. Perhaps keeping to the shadows would be best. Maybe even getting some high ground to see what we can see.
Rhea nods, and Lulu starts fluttering around, looking a little concerned. Oh dear, so much pain and misery. Oh, we need to do something about it. But, oh, I remember the smell. Yes, yes, we are in Avernus. But I think I can offer some light, if it's needed. Does anyone need some light?
I wouldn't mind some light, Lulu. Whatever you can do.
Lulu begins to emanate a soft glow. It helps a little, not much, but a little to disperse some of that smoke and grime in the air and make things a little easier to see. Larissa, what are you doing?
Larissa is very keen to get a view of what's going on overall. This reminds her very much of the bathhouse, in that we're seeing a very small viewpoint. So if she can, she'll want to try and scale a not too tall building, something akin to what she scaled at the bathhouse, and just take a look down the streets that we're kind of on, further in the distance, to see if she can see the masses or shapes of people or movement, fires burning, anything like that.
You certainly begin to climb what you think looks like a safe area, and you use rope that you did bring with you. Roll me a dexterity acrobatics check.
That's going to be 19.
And you begin to scale up this wall. There's a moment where you grab some masonry and it comes away in your hand, but luckily you are able to sort of right yourself, using, of course, your tail, and you take a breath and you scale higher. The others wait for you as you get a better view of things, but the truth is, it's still hard to see much. What you do see is that Eturiel is large. That makes sense to you. This is supposed to be a large city, and you can see city stretching out for miles. But so much of it is destroyed. There are holes in random places. And it's then that as you climb higher, you notice a strange effect happening. You do think you can see the edge of the city, but then it's like there's nothing there, which seems strange. But then you sort of notice through one of these holes, you can see through the hole, and beneath it, you are in the air. The whole city is elevated, and there is stuff beneath the city, you think. But again, you can't quite see from here. You also notice 8 things that do not look like they belong to Eturiel. They are giant, black, jagged spikes made of metal, towering almost as tall as a few buildings. They seem to be surrounding the outskirts of the city, and you think you can see attached to them chains, massive chains. You think the city is floating in the air? Is it held up by these chains? Or is it being held in place? This is what you see.
Larissa climbs back down. So, I think we're above something. Eturiel hasn't just been placed somewhere in Avernus. I think... I think we're suspended in the air. We're either anchored in place or literally being suspended. But there are huge holes over the city, like the ground's missing. And there's something beneath it. I can't see what.
Rhea frowns a little and says, did you... The Eastern Gate has a great statue of an angel above it. Did you see something like that? And you think you did see in One Direction something a little looking like that, yes?
I did. I think, I don't know, so much of the... If you think the destruction is bad here, it looks like the city's been half leveled in places. But I think it's that direction, and she'll point in whichever direction she remembers it being in.
Rhea nods quickly. Okay, if that is east, and that is west, we need to try and find the Great Bridge. The Great Bridge is in the middle of Ituriel. It crosses the river. But from there, the High Hall is not too far. Let's go this way. What do you say?
Yes, we need to move quickly and quietly, though. I didn't see anyone in the streets, at least not close by, but it's not to say that there isn't things lurking. Perhaps it would also be good to check in some of the houses as we pass, in case anyone's holed up. Let them know that there's someone here to help. Perhaps they'll even know what's going on.
All right. Sounds like we have a plan. Maybe we're gonna move on.
And so you begin making your way through these war-torn streets. It's a strange feeling, Lothar. Have you ever been in a battle like this? You've seen some battles in your time, but have you ever seen a city under siege?
A city under siege? Well, we did lay siege to some places with the Flaming Fist, but not on this level, I wouldn't say. No, this is quite something different from what I'm used to.
As you make your way through the city, there are times you'll have to be quiet, there are times you'll have to find the right path. I'd like each of you to tell me what you are doing, and then we shall roll for it. So, Lothar, what will you do as you make your way through these burnt city streets to help your group?
I try to move softly and not make too much noise with my clanking armor or the shield that I'm carrying around. And I move pretty close to Lulu, and I try to keep her, try to encourage. Thank you. You're really helping a lot with that light. It's making everything better. Just trying to make her feel, at ease here.
Royce, what do you do to help the group?
The image burnt in my mind is that of the imp or demon or infernal creature that spoke to Royce before he pulled him into the portal. So I'm going to be, as we're walking, sneaking through the city, looking down alleyways, dark shadowy corners, see is there anyone watching us like there was in Baldur's Gate.
And Larissa, what do you do?
Larissa is going to be, again, trying to keep quiet, and she will shift between walking with the group and occasionally scaling the odd building or so to watch ahead down the street or where we meet a crossing, checking down those crossroads before we move across. But if she can, she wants to dip into windows and houses and places as she goes, only briefly, kind of go in through the window, scan the room, come out through the door. She wants to see if she finds any people or if there's any signs of obvious combat in the city, strange claw marks in the walls or clearly signs of there having been fighting within the homes, not just the streets. She's looking for anything that might give a clue as to what the condition of this city was kind of when it arrived and what was going on during that time before everything seems to have become desolate and empty.
Larissa, I would like you to roll stealth. I would like Royce to roll perception. And I'd like Lothar to roll persuasion.
It's 17 for me.
It's a 4 for me.
And a 22 for me.
Royce is not in his game.
You begin making your way through streets, hallways, burning buildings. The ground shakes every now and then. Again, that lightning sometimes just strikes an area in front of you. Lothar, you spread good words to Lulu, and she glows a little brighter. She makes the path a little easier. And you feel that your own fears feel quenched a little. You have the light of Gond with you. That cannot match anything infernal. No, you will not fall, at least not easily. Royce, you are doing your best to keep an eye on things, but it's difficult. There is sulfur in the air, there is shouting, there is screaming. At one point, you stop, and you think you see a group of beings moving past you. You manage to call a warning and kind of get everyone out of the way, but as you're watching, you then see some people. You think a man and a woman. They're on the streets, covered in rags, covered in filth. They try and run. They've been spotted by these horned beings, these beings with horns and weird tendrils. It's almost as if they have beards, but the tendrils are made of flesh, not hair. You realize, though, there is nothing you can do. It is over in a moment, and these devils have taken this man and woman, beaten them round the head, and begin moving away with them into an alley. Maybe if you'd seen them a bit sooner, you could have helped, but the group assure you, come, we need to keep moving. Even Rhea agrees, we don't have time to chase after everything. There are so many, you see. Several other times you come across patrols of things that look like that. Sometimes there are things flying through the sky. One time you swear, Royce, you see a whole 10 or 20 strange dog-like creatures rushing through a building, and there is some fighting happening inside. But again, Larissa manages to convince you that you can't stop. You need to keep going. Larissa, you are finding the way through a lot of this. With Rhea's help, though, Rhea does know the streets, but you can see the dangers. But again, at one point you think you see some people. You kind of go to them, and they are hesitant to speak to you. It's like a woman and a child huddled in a corner of a building, but you offer them a smile and tell them that you're going to the High Hall. Rhea comes and joins you, and they nod and say they'll follow, but they can't yet. There's too many outside. Apparently, for days, the few people who have not made it to the High Hall, because that apparently is where people are going, but many are still stuck in different parts of the city at these creatures. Sometimes they attack them. Sometimes they fight each other. This woman doesn't understand why. Larissa, you don't think you can convince them to come with you now, and you just nod and say, meet us at the High Hall and move on.
She'll leave them some... They would have bought, like, food provisions with them. She'll leave them some of that, especially because she's got a child with her.
Hmm. And all three of you, finally, after maybe an hour, maybe two, find... Suddenly, a great opening comes before you. Over this opening is a bridge. Quite a large bridge. Statues flank it on either side, statues of holy beings and warriors with their fists held high. On the bridge are a number of devils. Clad in armor, these bearded beings seem to have a very strange armor. It's very black, very heated by fire, but skillfully woven across their forms. Lothar, you find that a little interesting, actually, because it occurs to you, most devils you've been shown pictures of in your teachings don't wear armor. Why would they need to? At least most of the smaller devils. But then you remember what you learnt about death here being a little more permanent than in your realm, and maybe it pays to have more protection here, you feel. They are patrolling this bridge, and Rhea goes, okay, there's the bridge. We need to get across it. If you look, there are runes. Lothar, you're familiar with holy attunement, yes? If you could read the spell, would you... You could do a holy spell, right?
I can, yes.
I think if you enchant the enchantment, it will raise the defenses of the bridge, and it might clear the way for us, but we need to be careful. Do you think you can do this?
Yes, if we can move together, yes.
Larissa, you find yourself near that edge. and you see a sight. It causes a lot of vertigo. You're floating in the air, Larissa, very high up, because beneath you is a whole landmass. You can make out a river, a very large river with black, almost blood-red water, churning as far as you can see, stretching from one point of the horizon to the other. It seems the city is directly above this river. On either side of the river are countless individual beings. You can't guess how many, but there must be thousands. You can't really make out what sort of beings they are, but you can see their movements. You can see on one side, things look very a little orderly, like things are arranged in maybe squares. And there's machines as well. Some sort of weird machines I don't think you've ever seen before, but you maybe you've seen a windmill or a horse and cart. These look a little like those, but they're very strange. And on the other side, just masses of movement and masses of things. How does it feel to be seeing such a wonderful bird's eye view of quite an immense sight?
As Larissa kind of looks down, and again, it's that kind of the shock of, you know, I imagine Lothar told her about what he'd read about the Blood Wars and the River Styx, and it's an image in your mind, and then she's actually seeing this, and this is all she can presume it to be, as everything, it kind of ticks all the boxes of what she's heard. And it's just, it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming to know that they're in a dangerous city right now, but it's nothing compared to what they're hanging over. And it leads her to many thoughts. What keeps the city up? What happens if we do what we're supposed to do? What happens if this city comes crashing down onto that battlefield below? Just, it feels like quite literally everything is dangling by a thread that could snap at any second. And she kind of has to eventually bring herself away from that edge and go back. And she tries to put on that same slight kind of joking smile that she normally has, but it's laced with fear as she turns to everyone and says, "I don't mean to alarm any of you, but I think I've just found the River Styx. It's right below us."
We need to figure out how to get out of here and do it quick before anyone or anything notices us and takes this whole city down to get us.
I agree. So, all right then. What should we do? Lothar, do you think you can get there quickly and read those runes?
Yes. Yeah, I think I can do it.
Lothar, what do you do? It's only a minute away, but these beings are patrolling the bridge. How do you approach?
Well, is there any way of making a somewhat stealthy approach, or...
There is, yes. There is so much chaos, so much noise. Your armor, you don't think, would actually be a problem. But you will need to at least try and be stealthy, you feel, to get there stealthily.
I'll just try to get there as quickly as possible and hope that, well, whoever is guarding this place won't have enough time to react.
Lothar, do you want me to follow behind you, just in case?
I think that would be prudent, yes. Just in case I run into any trouble.
Larissa will follow up behind, and she's basically got one hand on a short sword, and the other hand she's got ready and waiting in case she has to cast something. She's just gonna hang back somewhere in the shadows and just cover Lothar and keep an eye on the figures on the bridge.
Royce?
I've got your back, buddy. You can look... I'll keep an eye out. I'm going to probably go up with him as close as possible, but try to sneak as well. Just if anything does break out, I'd like to be close.
Well, we'll say that Royce, you get into a stealthy position and Larissa follows, but Lothar, you run for it. Roll me an athletics check.
That is a dirty 20.
Lothar, you burst forth quickly as you can. It's almost a little too quick. You kind of just run to that bridge and for a moment just put your hand on it and then you just look down and you see the sight Larissa has seen and you almost take a breath that you could have just hurtled straight into oblivion, but you've just stopped yourself. It's sort of like a moment of like, huh.
Oh. And I immediately try to read these symbols or try to, yes, do this thing I came here to do.
Roll me a religion check. You, as you're reading, notice movement on the bridge. You've been seen, but You've got there very quickly, so make me that check.
I roll 5.
You begin reading, and you haven't actually seen this sort of thing before, but wait, no, you do recognize that. It's... You think you know what to say, but it's taken some time. Larissa, you've just come up behind Lothar, and you see 5 or 6 beings armed with long spears charging towards you at full speed. What do you do, Larissa?
Is it really obvious that they've spotted us?
Oh, yes.
Larissa's going to try to call out in Infernal and see if she can just avoid this whole conflict. Because I think the less fighting we do, the better.
What do you call out?
She calls out in Infernal, "Halt, these ones are mine." Because she knows that there is an order and there is also a sense of belonging as well when it comes to devils.
The creatures charging forwards stop suddenly, and there is a moment of confusion. Lothar, the last word. You know it. You know this spell. One spell slot of channeling will activate this spell. What do you do?
Then I shall do that.
Then you spend a spell slot, and you intone these words. You're not quite certain of what they mean, Lothar, but you know they are words of Helm and Tyr and Torm that do something. And as you do so, you feel a sudden radiation of energy from you, and even though Gond feels far away, he is still here in some way, and he channels himself through you. The bridge is lit up by holy light. The creatures that were looking at you, Larissa, which did pause at your thing, you think they weren't expecting someone to speak to them Infernal, have a moment of panic and suddenly are vaporized. The entire bridge is lit with holy flame and holy electricity. And in seconds, it is cleared, and the buzzing fades. And Lothar, you feel a little tired, but you did it.
Oh, thank you, Gond.
I just want to check. That's not going to happen if I cross that bridge, is it?
You did feel a little sting when the light came up, but as it fades, you feel better again.
I think she does it more to kind of break the tension as we're all kind of standing there like, oh god, that was nearly really bad.
Rhea runs forward and goes, "Ah, well done, Lothar. Oh no, Larissa, don't worry. He'd have to say it again. It's the holy runes are there to protect against infernal beings. I guess this one's still working. Good, good. Well done. Let's cross. The High Hall is close."
Yes, we should get a move on in case anybody else saw that.
Oh yeah. I bet they have.
If I felt the twinge even from here, then I hate to think what actual devils can feel when that goes off.
Yeah. You all right, Lulu?
Yes, I'm good. Let's go.
I nod and begin moving.
Royce?
I follow up, trailing behind the group just again, still checking to make sure that we're not being watched or followed or tracked or stalked.
And for now, you seem fine. And all of you cross the Great Bridge. A bridge that once led over a river, but now leads into a massive, massive plane of existence, teeming with beings of infernal nature, and the River Styx churning below you. Still, Rhea reaches the end of the bridge and points. She points somewhere nearby, a large building. This must be the High Hall.
You have listened to an episode of Red Moon Roleplaying, where we play the campaign Baldur's Gate Descent into Avernus for Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition. We were joined by Virginia Page, who is Tabletop Horde on Twitter, and Owen Forwee from the How We Roll podcast. We would like to extend our thanks to our friends at Wizards of the Coast for all their support in getting us the material early and for helping more people discover the show. The music was made by Halgrath, Aegis Sornis, Atrium Carceri, and Herbst 9, and was used with permission from their label, Cryochamber. Check out their website at cryochamber.bandcamp.com or their YouTube channel for more moody, dark ambient. We also used the soundtrack for Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 by Michael Hoenig, and to Planescape Torment by Mark Morgan, and permission for this was given by the awesome people at Beamdog. Check out the enhanced editions of those classic games for some of the best D&D adventures ever created. We would like to give a massive thanks to our champions of the Red Moon, Martin Heuschoper and David, for their generous support. And we would of course also like to thank all of our other patrons. Without your support, the show would not be possible. If you want to support our work, please check us out on Patreon. You can get access to bonus campaigns for Cult Divinity Lost and Coriolis there, as well as get early and raw access to all of our recordings. You can also hear your name read on the show as a champion of the Red Moon, as well as play Cult with Hjalmar and Craig. Most importantly, this support is indeed what keeps the show going, so please do check us out there. Thank you again for listening, and see you soon again.